Hello there and welcome back to Archaeology News Weekly. I am David Connolly and I have to say I'm freezing. Yes, we have winter storms raging around us just now, but I hope you'll be nice and warm where you are and listening to this episode of the news. This news, of course, is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and myself, the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and so to view details on each story, including that vital source, see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. So let's get going with the headlines. We've got Bronze Age Britain revealed as never before. Then we have excavations in Serbia questioning early humans in Europe. Then our ancestors speak out after 3 million years. There's a man facing jail for demolishing an ancient Irish ring fort. I guess not, sadly. But on a brighter note, archaeologists have saved an Iron Age monument in England. A cave yields the oldest human remains ever found in Japan. And we've got evidence of 42,000-year-old deep-sea fishing in the Pacific. Bronze Age treasures return to northern England, and a Stone Age axe is found on a Cotswold shoreline. There's, of course, our Stonehenge story of the week, or is it? As we have features which may predate and lend a clue to the significance of Stonehenge. We finish off with the Monteprama ancient statues now on display at last. Remember, you could be listening to all this on the Stone Pages Archaeo News app, as well as keeping up with the news as it happens. So let's start off today's podcast. Six boats hollowed out of oak tree trunks are among hundreds of intact artefacts from 3,000 years ago that have been discovered in the Cambridgeshire Fens of eastern England. The scale, quality and condition of the objects have astonished archaeologists. The largest Bronze Age collection ever found in one place in Britain, and is barely a fraction of the site. The dig is likely to continue for years. David Gibson, Cambridge University Archaeology Unit Project Manager, said that the discoveries were internationally important. One canoe would be great, two would be exceptional, but six almost feels greedy. Lucky people. The boats, two of which bear unusual decoration, are in such good condition that the wood grain and colour can still be seen, as can signs of repairs by their owners. One is 8.3 metres long and the smallest is just over 4. Unique textile fragments, wicker baskets and a wooden sword, a sword with a wooden handle have survived. There's even containers of food, including a bowl with a wooden spoon still wedged into the contents from 1000 BCE. The artefacts were preserved because they were immersed in deep layers of peat and silt. When these layers were lifted off, the objects are pristine, said Mark. It's as if 3,000 years had never happened. The artefacts were submerged under an ancient watercourse along the southern edge of the Flag Fen Basin. You might have heard of Flag Fen before. The land altered over millennia with rising sea levels. Along the 150-metre stretch of the Bronze Age River Channel, they found the best-preserved examples of prehistoric river life ever in Britain. There are weirs and fish traps in the form of big woven willow baskets, plus fragments of garments with ornamental hems made from fibrous bark and jewellery, including green and blue beads. Extensive finds of metalwork, including swords and spears, some apparently tossed into the river in perfect condition, possibly donate votive offerings. Mark said eventually that often at an excavation, I was going to try and put his accent on there, but I promise I won't do that, Mark. He said that often at an excavation, it takes much imagination for it to become apparent, but this site just doesn't need it. It's intact. It feels as if they've actually caught up with Bronze Age people. It feels like you're actually there. A fabulous site and much reported on. We're actually hoping at Past Horizons to get some exclusive photographs, and there will be videos as well. Now to Serbia. The Sikevo Gorge, a canyon cut into the Kunjevica Plateau in southeastern Serbia, contains a series of caves, at least one of which has yielded evidence of human presence during the Ice Age of present-day Europe. In 2008, anthropologists excavating a small cave uncovered a partial human lower jaw with three teeth. Well, Dr. Rosanjic, University of Winnipeg, said that they were looking for Neanderthals, but this was much better. What they'd actually discovered was definitively human, at least in terms of morphology, and it predated the Neanderthals and may have had more in common physically with Homo erectus, though by many thought by many scientists to be the precursor of both Neanderthals and modern humans. Recent tests conducted by Dr. Norbert Mercier at the University of Bordeaux in France produced a date of older than 13,000 years BP, long before modern humans were found in present-day Europe, and the fossil could be substantially older. The find raises new questions about the picture of early human movement and subsistence within a geographic area that researchers suggest was a southern haven for early humans during the shifting glaciation of the Ice Age. Rosanjic commented that the absence of Neanderthal traits in a specimen of this age is counter to the common assumption that Neanderthals were the only hominin group in Europe during this time period. Any new finds are bound to be extremely relevant, as there is such a dearth of information on this critical area for human and animal movement in and out of Europe. The Balkans, which includes the Sečevo Gorge, are thought to be one of the three southern refuges for the oscillating glaciation of Europe in the Pleistocene era. Sečevo Gorge is unique in that it was the only one that was never experiencing geographic isolation, and thus offers immense potential as a setting for important research on the biogeography of both early human and animal populations during the Paleolithic period. This includes research on the migratory routes that early humans took when emerging from their African homeland. The team plans to return again and explore the caves in 2012. Working backwards from clues in ancient skeletons, Dutch researcher Bart de Boer has built plastic models of early hominins' vocal tracts that recreated the sounds our ancestors may have made millions of years ago. Non-human primates have an organ called an air sac, a large cavity that connects to the vocal tract linked to an extension on the hyoid bone known as the hyoid bulla. Modern humans have neither the air sac nor the extension on the hyoid bone, but Australopithecus afarensis, a hominin species that roamed Africa approximately 3.9 million to 2.9 million years ago, had a hyoid bulla and likely an air sac as well. De Boer built models of the human vocal tract both without an air sac, like modern humans, and with one, as Australopithecus afarensis would have had. By pushing air through the models, he could hear what various vowels sounded like. The air sacs acted like a bass drum resonating at lower frequencies and causing vowel sounds to merge, and Australopithecus would have had a greatly reduced vocabulary. What then might our ancestors' first words have been? Well, with air sacs, vowels tended to sound like a but studies suggest it's easier to produce a consonant plus a vowel, and D is easier to form with U. So here comes a joke. What he says is he believes that the cavemen and cavewomen likely said duh before they said ugh. I am sure that what they would have said is, I listen to Archaeology News Weekly. I've not been around that long, honestly. Now, sad news, an Irishman is facing a possible 5-year jail term after he was prosecuted for demolishing an ancient ring fort on land belonging to his family. In the first case of its kind to be heard in an Irish court, John O'Mahony appeared at Tralee Circuit Criminal Court, where he pleaded guilty to carrying out unauthorised work near a monument on his family's land in Causeway back in 2008. The court heard that the family of Mr. O'Mahony, a 64-year-old farmer, owned land which contained a ring fort and a series of underground tunnels or souterrains which dated back to between 500 BCE and 100 CE. The ring fort and souterrain system were deemed to be a national monument of historic importance and had been placed on the National Register. While Irish landowners are allowed to carry out work on or near national monuments that are on the register, they must first contact the Department of Environment and receive express written permission from the minister before they proceed. Judge Carol Moran was told that in February 2008, without seeking permission from the department, John O'Mahony hired workers who demolished the majority of the ring fort and then used materials to fill in a nearby pond. In the course of the work, the majority of the fort was destroyed, while two-thirds of the souterrain was demolished. When the Department of Environment learned of the demolition, they contacted Garda, that's the police in Ireland, who launched an investigation. During the Garda investigation, John O'Mahony admitted to ordering the demolition of the fort, but said he didn't know he wasn't allowed to touch the site without permission from the minister. Prosecution barrister told the court that as a result of O'Mahony's actions, part of the history and culture of County Kerry had been irretrievably lost. Defence barrister Mr. John O'Sullivan said that his client simply didn't understand the implications of his actions. Which is strange, because a few months earlier he'd actually used the ancient monument as an excuse to try and stop a development that was going to be happening nearby. Anyway, I won't prejudice the case. It's been adjourned until January 2012, so hopefully we'll find out what happens to him then. Archaeologists from Gloucestershire County Council, with funding from Natural England, have repaired damage to a historic Iron Age hill fort eroded by thousands of walkers on the edge of a scarp on Cleve Common. Under the guidance of the County Council's archaeologist Andrew Armstrong, they made a record of what was exposed. Staff from the Council's estates team, led by Alan Watson, were then called in to lay down soil and turf, and a wire mesh was laid over the top of it to keep the earthwork in place. County archaeologist Jan Wills says the area of high ground on top of the common is a very important settlement site, occupied from 400 BCE right up to the Roman occupation around about 43 CE. It's amazing that such a remarkable monument can survive for thousands of years, but start walking on it and it becomes as delicate as a flower. Now, on that rather poetic note, let's head off to Japan. Japan's oldest known human remains have been found in caves on Ishigaki Island in Okinawa Prefecture. Minoru Yoneda, an associate professor at the University of Tokyo, confirmed the human remains dated back some 24,000 years after inspecting human bones excavated at the... Oh, I knew I was going to have trouble with this one. I'll try. Shirahosa Onetabara Cave. I won't do that one again. The ancient cave is also home to approximately 20,000-year-old human remains dating back to the Paleolithic period, previously the nation's oldest known traces of human existence. A past survey had found that one of the six pieces of human bones found at the site dated back some 20,000 years through C14 dating of collagen extracted from the bones. However, researchers have been unable to identify the layer that actually held them. Prehistoric humans living more than 40,000 years ago had mastered the skills needed to catch fast-moving, deep-ocean fish, new archaeological finds reveal. Jerimale Cave, a small rock overhang hidden behind foliage a few hundred metres from the shores at the eastern end of East Timor, is where archaeologist Associate Professor Sue O'Connor from the Australian National University has unearthed the bones of more than 2,800 fish, some caught 42,000 years ago. What the site has shown us is that early modern humans in islands Southeast Asia had amazingly advanced maritime skills. It seems certain that these people were using quite sophisticated technology and watercraft to fish so far offshore. So far, O'Connor and her colleagues have only excavated two small test pits, but in just one of those, 1 metre square and 2 metres deep, they found 39,000 fish bones, along with a number of stone artefacts, bone points, animal remains, shell beads and fish hooks. They also unearthed a small piece of fishing hook made from a shell, which dates to between 23 and 16,000 years ago, which is the earliest example of a fishing hook ever found. She believes that the Jerimale Cave gives us a window into what maritime coastal occupation was like 40 to 50,000 years ago, which is absolutely unique. If you want to see pictures of that, of course, get yourself along to Past Horizons and just type in fish hook. Now, back to the Bronze Age again, where a collection of Bronze Age weaponry discovered 270 years ago is returning to Ambleside in the Lake District of England. Archaeologists are now trying to find out exactly from where it came. Thought to be around 5,000 years old, the finds will be going on show at the Armit Museum in time for the building's centenary celebrations next March. They spent most of their life in the Royal Collection, which is loaning them back after 34 years of display in the British Museum. The weapons, a sword, sword blade, dagger and spearhead, were found in a kind of bundle 2 feet deep in a peat bog in Ambleside in 1741. The discovery was recorded at the time and the item sketched by a man called, wait for it, I wish I had a name like this, Peregrine Bertie. Well, Bertie's account was published in the Journal of the Spaulding's Gentleman's Society and then the hoard disappeared. More than 200 years later, the pieces were rediscovered at the British Museum by historian Stuart Needham, where they formed a prominent part of the permanent exhibition on the Bronze Age. The weapons are thought to be ceremonial and were probably buried in standing water as a votive offering to the gods, as was the custom. The hoard is the only discovery of its kind in southern Lakeland, though there have been Bronze Age finds in northern Cumbria. Deborah Walsh, curator of the Armit, said that they are looking at various sites around the area to try and establish where exactly they were found. Come on, Peregrine, where were they found? It should be possible to find the site by working out where people were cutting peat at that time in the 18th century. Before the last ice age, the vast majority of what is now known as Warwickshire in the English Midlands was under the waters of a huge lake called Lake Harrison. This is, of course, known by the geologists as Lake Harrison. The small Cotswold town of Morton and Marsh would have been quite near the southern shore of that lake. Now it is hoped the discovery of a Stone Age axe on a building site may add weight to that theory. The discovery was made during the mandatory pre-construction archaeological survey, and the axe has been initially dated at 50,000 BCE. It's made of finely honed flint and is known as a cut butt, hand axe used for butchering large animals. Laurie Coleman from Cotswolds Archaeology is quite excited by the find. This finely worked stone tool, between 50 to 30,000 years old, provides evidence of Neanderthal presence in the area. Laurie goes on to say that the sophisticated technique used to produce the tool, together with its symmetrical outline and attention to detail, suggests well-developed cognitive skills in the Neanderthals and maybe even their understanding of the abstract concept of beauty. The axe dates to a time of recolonisation by Neanderthals after a prolonged absence. Now, of course, it's nearly Stonehenge story of the week. Very controversial one, this one, by the way, so listen carefully. Since the summer of 2010, an international team of archaeologists led by the University of Birmingham from England and the Ludwig Boltzmann Institute for Archaeological Prospection and Virtual Archaeology from Vienna have been conducting a large-scale, non-intrusive survey of the Stonehenge site and the surrounding area, known as, imaginatively, Stonehenge Hidden Landscape Project. They've been using ground-penetrating radar and geophysical imaging and have recently discovered evidence which, if proved to be true, could push back the importance of the area as a sacred site to over 500 years before the first of the stone circles was erected. In essence, the team have found evidence of two large pits. Without a physical excavation of the sites, none of these conjectures can be proved, though. So why is the discovery of two pits so significant? Good question. Well, to those familiar with the Stonehenge site, they occur at opposite ends of a feature known as the cursus, which is located to the north of the main stone circles. The cursus comprises two parallel ditches flanked by banks and with closed ends, which runs for approximately 1 kilometre in a roughly east-west direction. Nothing unusual in that, you might think, but when the team started to map the finds, they noticed something quite exciting. At the summer solstice, the pit at the east end of the cursus appears to be perfectly aligned with the rising sun and the heelstone, which stands just outside the entrance to the stone circles. Similarly, there would have been an alignment with the western pit, the setting sun and the heelstone. Further conjecture has noted that if a procession was progressing along the cursus from the sunrise pit to the sunset pit following the sun, then the mid part of the journey would coincide with midday, when the sun was at its highest, directly over where the stone circles are now. The news of this discovery has spread throughout the world's press, but one note of caution has been raised by Mike Pitts, the archaeologist and writer, editor of British Archaeology. He notes that the anomalies, or the pits, have not been excavated or cored, and so their age and function still remains speculation. A comment on his blog also notes that there could have been quite a margin of error in the assumed alignments. You can again see more of that on the Past Horizons site too, including some of the links that you'll require. Now, finally, I know it's quite a short one, but I'm absolutely freezing, so I'm just going to get myself wrapped up with a hot toddy. So this is our last story now. 37 years after their discovery, the stone giants of Monte Prama are being shown to the public for the first time in the gallery of Le Ponte in Sassari, Sardinia, for the exhibition called Stones and the Heroes. On display are 25 impressive statues about 2 metres tall and 13 models of nuraghi, ancient Sardinian towers. 10 tons and 5,178 fragments of white limestone have been reassembled into 16 statues of boxers, some with carved and rectangular shields above their heads, 5 of archers and 4 of warriors with round shields, characterised by eyes represented by 2 concentric circles. The extraordinary collection of prehistoric sculptures, unearthed in 1974, will soon be separated. One part will be housed in the Museum of Cabras near Oristano, the other to the Archaeological Museum of Caligari. Everything started in the spring of 1974 when the plough of Cecinio Poddi came up against something hard. After removing the earth, the farmer was amazed by 2 wide-eyed stares framed by a stone face. The report to the authorities was immediate, and between 1974 and 1975, the Archaeological and University of Caligari set up the first excavations. Speaking of dating, scholars currently are supporting 2 timeframes here. The first one places the statues around the 7th century BCE. The other one goes to the end of the first millennium BCE. After the discovery, nothing happened for more than 30 years, broken only in 2005 when the Italian Ministry for Cultural Heritage and Sardinian Regional Council allocated €1.2 million for the restoration, of which this exhibition in Sassari marks the conclusion. Archaeologists will soon be returning to Monte Prama, perhaps as early as next spring, as an additional €250,000 has been allocated to launch a new excavation campaign, along with further restoration and consolidation works. The exhibition in Sassari will be open until December the 30th, from Thursday to Sunday. So if you're in Sardinia and you are interested in archaeology, and hopefully you are because you're listening to this, then why not get along there? Tell you what, I wish I was in Sardinia just now. Anyway, enough of my complaining. Don't forget that our news is also available on the iPhone, iPod Touch and iPad. Get along to www.stonepages.com/app. And keep your eyes on pasthorizons.com as well as our brand spanking new redesigned TV site, pasthorizons.tv. I am actually spending most of my time now trying to transfer about 600 videos over to that. I can tell you that's fun. But I've been complaining again. It must be the weather's getting to me. Can I remind you, of course, that more can always be found at Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. Thanks for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you'll return to us next week, the Christmas edition. And if you don't mind, I'm off to have my hot toddy.